Hello, everybody. This is Paul Douglas Boyer. Welcome back to the Mad Money Machine. This is show number 50. And I thought for a second about doing a retrospective, but no, we will charge forward into the future. If you want a retrospective, well, there's 49 other shows you can go back and listen to. This show's not just about getting rich, it's about getting free, financial freedom. And one of the aspects of feeling free is being comfortable with the level of risk that you're taking, and I'm going to talk a lot more about risk on this show. We've got a tool for you, we've got a guru, we've got a lot more great stuff, and I've got the results of the poll, which is the best way to invest. Coming right up on the Mad Money Machine. In addition to the poll that I put out on the website of which is the best way to invest, I've added a new one now, and the question is simply this. Will you buy an iPhone? There's two choices. Yes, you notice the exclamation point. Or no, notice again the exclamation point. People have a pretty polar opinion, I think, about the iPhone. Now, I did not attend Macworld, but what I did do is I had my web browser pointed to several of these bloggers who were there taking notes during the presentation, and one of them, every single minute, had a new note about the keynote that was given by Steve Jobs. And so you refresh your browser to read along what was going on at the Macworld convention. And I've got to tell you, for the folks sitting in that speech, it must have been for them an absolute pinnacle of religious experience for them. I know I heard some people on other podcasts talk about that they were actually crying as they were listening to Steve Jobs talk about this new product coming out. It's amazing that it blew away everyone's expectations by such a wide margin. Even the wildest pretend iPhones that people would draw up, this surpassed those. And it's going to be fascinating to watch this product come to market and follow along with what Apple's going to do with this product. How will it impact the cell phone business? How will it in fact impact the iPod business? Because, you know, it only holds 8 gigabytes. Now, the iPod that I have, that I gave my wife a couple Christmases ago, and that now that I've taken over and used again, it's a 30 gigabyte iPod. So what's that about? That's almost 4 times as much as this cell phone iPod thing will hold. And I've got to tell you that it's crammed full of music and other podcasts. And so I don't think that I would be able to use this iPhone as my sole music device, unfortunately. Now, wouldn't it just be a miracle if instead of 8 gigabytes, it had something like 50 or 60 or 100 gigabytes? I'd pay $1,200 for something like that, I think. Just one device to carry around instead of multiple devices. In soccer news, David Beckham comes to the United States, I hadn't followed the Premier Soccer League at all, so I don't know a whole lot about Beckham, but I have seen a couple of movies. I saw Bend It Like Beckham, which I guess he cameoed in, and I saw the movie Goal that he had a cameo appearance in as well. But I'll be watching as he plays for the Los Angeles Galaxy. I got a late Christmas present, or perhaps early birthday present, last week, and you'll never guess what it was. Now, I'd like to consider it more of the late Christmas present. That way, I still have a slot open for birthday presents. I got a pair of rollerblades as a gift. And I've mentioned before how my chair has been feeling the pain since Christmas. Well, this is going to be one of our strategies, is to try to do a little bit more rollerblading, inline skating, and get some exercise. The TV show that I've talked about, Daybreak, the sort of the cross between Groundhog Day and a detective show. They talked about how when they put that on, it was going to run for 13 episodes. They played six of them and stopped. And that's it. We're done. Sorry, show's over. There have been some websites that mentioned they may show the remaining seven episodes on the web, but they have completely removed any reference to Daybreak from the ABC.com website. It's gone. Boy, you guys must have really hated that show. I mean, it was in a prime spot. It took over for Lost's position. You'd think everybody would have their TV all ready to come on instead of Lost, but you did not. Let's have a look at now at this poll that I put out on the MadMoneyMachine.com website. And it was simply this question: which is the best way to invest? Three choices were there: carefully picking stocks, or buy and hold in index funds, or a mix of these two. And I'm going to view the results right now. There were 47 votes cast in total. The lowest vote gatherer, by only 8 votes, was buy and hold in index funds. And of course, that includes my vote was in there. So take away mine, that's only 7. The second one was carefully picking stocks. 12 people chose carefully picking stocks. And the big vote getter was a mix of these two. 27 votes, 57% of the total of those folks voting, said a mix of these two, both buy and hold in index funds and carefully picking stocks. And of course, any fan of Jim Cramer's TV show would say that's the right answer. He says, you know, you've got your retirement money, don't mess with that. Just put that away in mutual funds or whatever. And now we get into the mad money part, he says. And even in the mad money part of your portfolio, let's call it 5% of your entire net worth, say. Even within that, you might have 20% of the mad money is in speculative stocks. And even on a show recently, he said, well, of your speculative stocks, choose 5 different speculative stocks. And so you can see how we're reducing risk all the way down to the smallest possible unit. And I think that's probably a fair answer. But if you're really answering the question, what is the best way to invest? The best way to invest, meaning how can you most assuredly make the maximum possible amount of money with the lowest amount of risk or the same amount of risk? I've got to say that buy and hold in index funds is the best answer. Now, if you don't agree with those of you that don't agree with me, tell me why at the forums at madmoneymachine.com. You can go to the Mad Money website up at the top right, click forums, go in there, and in one of those forums, post a comment as to why carefully picking stocks needs to be a component of your investment strategy. I'd be interested to learn that. The Mad Money Machine is getting attention from brokers, mutual fund managers, and commission-based advisors. How do I know this? Because they're all rating the show out at iTunes. And I realize that there are a lot of people that don't like the message that I'm sending on this show. And I realize that they probably have a very strong interest to dissuade others from listening to this show. And therefore, they might be some of the people who are putting some of the comments out at iTunes. I also realize that it's not for everybody. I am boring. You know, come on. And so truth be told, I appreciate your feedback as long as you keep listening. It's a new year, and it's time to introduce a new segment for the Mad Money Machine, a segment where we answer one of your frequently asked questions, a segment I'll call The Answer.
Staring you right in the face is the answer.
The most popular question probably asked is, if everyone followed an indexing strategy, would markets still be efficient? Let's listen to Rex Sinkfield of Dimensional Funds Advisors.
Well, that's like asking what would happen if everyone became virtuous. I don't know. It would be heavenly, I suppose. I certainly don't know what the economic effects would be, but it's not anything that's going to happen in our lifetime. Despite the fact that we're now 25 years into indexing, still, I think in the area of retail investing in this country, I doubt that there's even 1% of assets invested in index funds. In the large pension fund community, it might be as much as 30% of equities. And around the world, I'm sure it doesn't approach 1%. So it's not anything to worry about. I don't know the answer, but I know it's not one that we're going to need to know for another 100 years or so.
Nevertheless, are you happy about how far the message has come?
Oh yeah, very much so. And I would be happier if the word got out more to the retail investor, because they're still the ones that are victimized by the age-old myths about stock picking and the high costs that go along with that.
Well, I don't know. I think it would be interesting if everyone indexed. Just imagine all of the commissions and expenses that wouldn't be leached out of people's pockets all over the world, and that could be put to good use in the world, couldn't it? Do you have an investment question? Type it or call it in, because we've got the answer.
Staring you right in the face is the answer.
It's the music that makes that fun, and that's Eric Vardaman with The Answer from music.podshow.com. So type your question to feedback@madmoneymachine.com, or type it in the forums, or call it in to the voicemail line, 206-734-4763, or Skype me at Mad Money Machine. It's time to shine the light on something that's been kept in the dark for too long. I've been focusing all on returns, and the Portfolio Smackdown is kind of heavily focused on the returns that you get on various investments. Well, there's another side to it that I haven't talked about as much, and I should talk about, and it's risk. It's an important question to ask. How much risk are you taking to achieve an expected return? Now, if you're trying to obtain a return of 15%, would you rather have an investment that has a standard deviation of 20%, or would you rather have an investment with a standard deviation of 40%? A standard deviation means basically means how far back and forth the investment can swing, high or low, how much higher or lower than your expected return. And so for two investments that you have the same expected return, you'd want the one with the lower risk, wouldn't you? Well, you know, back a few shows ago, our roulette wheel came up with Matt Krantz, and he's the guy out at USA Today, and he's got a column, Ask Matt, and he's got a particularly good column that was dated January 9th. Someone asked, would now be a good time to buy T. Rowe Price stock, TROW? And he goes into a kind of an analysis of T. Rowe Price as a stock, but he also compares the risk of the stock itself versus the risk of the S&P 500. And the bottom line is, the biggest knock on the stock is that the returns, although large, come with outsized risk. Something to think about before you buy an investment. Also look at its risk. I'll have a link to Matt Krantz's article in the show notes of this show. Music from a group named Paul and his Lonely remix from music.pajo.com. Let's pull something out of the tool crib. Well, this is a good time of year to be talking about eating less. And let's talk about the financial implications of eating less. What is the difference if you were to eat a bagged lunch instead of going out to eat? Over 20 years. Let's go to feedthepig.com and find out the answer. Click on the calculators tab and you can find in there the lunch savings calculator. So how much money would you save? Let's put in 20 years eating out lunch price. Let's say it's $6.50. All right, sounds pretty reasonable. Cost of a bag lunch, let's just put that at $3. Number of bag lunches per month. I'll say 10. That's just half of the lunches per month. And over 20 years, the difference at an expected rate of return of, let's put in expected rate of return of 8% in there. Over 20 years, eating those bag lunches will save you $20,000. Isn't that money that you think you'd want to have when you're reaching your financial independence? Well, there you have it, and it's all free. FeedThePig.com. So you remember last show I talked about how we're setting up this Madman Machine board of directors game. We've got 20 volunteers who are picking stocks Cramer style, and they've got a $100,000 portfolio, and they're going up against the IFA Index Folio 100. And of course, we're looking purely at returns here. We're not talking about the risks that you're taking in the various strategies. So it's a little bit asymmetrical. But let's look and see how the board of directors are doing so far. As of Friday, January 12th, the average return of all the board of directors' portfolios is up 1.53%. Pretty good. The IFA Index 100 is up 0.49%, half a percent. Not too bad. It actually turned negative the first couple of weeks of the year because some of the emerging market stocks and things were really spooked by Chavez down in Venezuela and all that stuff. But they're coming back. And there are a couple of board of directors who haven't done any investing yet. And I don't know whether they are trying to time the market and find a buy point for the entire portfolio or whether they're just lost interest and not with me anymore. So I'll be following you guys, and you know who you are, closely over the next few weeks to see if let me know if maybe your strategy is to time the market. Then I'll just leave you in. If I don't hear from you, then I might drop you from the board of directors game. Now, I'll tell you a little bit about my strategy for picking stocks Cramer style. Now, here's a little trick that I did. I went into the street.com Mad Money recap site of all of his shows. And, you know, at the very bottom of the recap site, it has a little disclaimer. It says, at the time of this publication, Jim Cramer was long, and then it'll list the stocks that he may have talked about during that show. For example, Halliburton or Sears Holdings. Well, I took the time to go back through every single show note all the way back to September and find all of the stocks that Jim Cramer is long. And in effect, these are the stocks that he owns. He himself owns in his Action Alerts portfolio, his charitable trust, he calls it. And of course, he has restrictions on how he trades in his charitable trust. After he mentions a stock, he can't trade it for 5 whole days. So, you know, he may get a caller into the lightning round who says, hey, what do you think about Halliburton? And now he can't sell it for 5 days or whatever. But I took all of those stocks, and I think there are about 24 of them. Let me look. No, there's 23 of them. Do you want me to read them to you? Well, I know you don't, but I'm going to anyway. RIG, Transocean, Shearing Plough, NYSE Group, Altria, Marvell Technology, Sears Holdings, URS Corporation, Yahoo, United Health Group, Seagate Technology, Toyota Motor, Capital One Financial, Diageo, Anheuser-Busch, AIG, American International Group, Bristol-Myers Squibb, Foster Wheeler, Ingersoll Rand, Johnson & Johnson, Hewlett-Packard, Goldman Sachs, and Halliburton. Now, if you've watched Mad Money at all, I know you've heard him mention several of these stocks on his show. He talks about these frequently. And actually, a couple of these stocks he's talked about recently as ones not to buy, like Yahoo and Capital One Financial. But nonetheless, he owns them in his charitable trust. Well, I thought that's what I would do. Now, I've split the money evenly across all 23 of these stocks, which doesn't, I'm sure, exactly reflect Jim's Action Alerts Plus account. But it's close as I can come. I'm not a subscriber to Action Alerts Plus. I don't feel like I'm giving anything away that isn't already available to you from his websites that you couldn't already get for yourself. But I think it's going to be interesting to track the performance of the stocks that he owns throughout 2007. And I'm going to do that in the Mad Money Machine Board of Directors Portfolio Smackdown game. And at the moment, that portfolio is up 1.16% for the year. But man, I wish I could compare the standard deviation of this portfolio versus the Index Folio 100's standard deviation. And MarketWatch just doesn't make that information available to us. Although it would be a great thing if websites like this would start to keep track of what is this stock's, what is this investment's standard deviation. Now, you know, I'm very proud to be sponsored by Index Funds Advisors at IFA.com. And they have the book that Mark Hebner wrote called Index Funds, the 12-step program for active investors. And you know what a 12-step program is, right? I mean, it started out as a thing to recover from addictions. And so it's sort of a tongue-in-cheek title to a very important subject. Well, I'm going to help you go through each of the 12 steps in the words of the author himself. I'm going to pull out some snippets from Mark Hebner's own podcast on the 12 steps and let you hear them here. So let's talk about step one, active investors. Who is an active investor?
Virtually all investors engage in some form of active management, the most common of which is trying to pick the next stock who's going to have a big run-up. Secondly, they're interested in what is the right time to invest. Is this interest rate environment a good time to invest or a bad time to invest? Thirdly, they're looking for a manager who's had some streak or hot record or great track record over the last year or two. They think that that's a good source of them hitting it big on Wall Street. And lastly, they look at different investment styles or even industries to see which is the next hot industry to be in.
With that definition, it sounds like most people are an active investor or have active investor tendencies. What are the risks for being an active investor?
It turns out that the risk for being an active investor is quite high. A risk is typically measured in what's called standard deviation, which basically means how much do your returns vary around the average return. And investors who insist on actively playing the market, so to speak, tend to have returns that are sometimes really high and sometimes really low. So by definition, that's a high level of risk. The unfortunate thing for these investors is that for all this risk, they actually get very little return. One of the important points we try to make in step one is that the average investor, after inflation, fees, and taxes, basically make no money with their investments. There's a 20-year study by the Dalbar Group that documents this. And over long periods of time, like 20 years, they underperform a globally diversified portfolio by about 66 times.
So with all these risks to being an active investor, what do you think is the better approach to investing?
Because of all these risks involved, and I might add that these risks go unrewarded in most cases. So because the active investing doesn't generate a positive return for investors, they're basically left searching for something that does. And what does provide returns for investors is just good old risk. Risk has an associated return with it, and the most efficient way for you to capture risk is through what's called an index fund. Index funds, you could think of them as units of risk that you can build together into a structure which would be an index portfolio. And typically, these are done in a very globally diversified manner and are really the ultimate investor choice or the ultimate investment for investors.
So how can listeners to the Mad Money Machine become better investors?
They can become better investors by turning off the CNBC, by stop reading Barron's and the many media sources that are just there to get you to trade. The more you resist trading, the better off you will be in the long term. There's a relatively famous paper among the academics by Odin and Barber that essentially states that the more you trade, the more you lose. And in fact, the title of the paper is Trading is Hazardous to Your Wealth.
Well, thanks, Mark. I'll encourage our listeners not to trade and also to turn off CNBC and instead pay attention to the Mad Money Machine. Thanks a lot. And now a word from The Secret Diary of Steve Jobs, a poem entitled, Sometimes I Feel Like a Golden God. Sometimes I feel like a golden god, glowing perfect, unstoppable, a colossus bestride the narrow world, a master of all domains, an artist of vast, unimaginable scale, an enigma, a tangle of contradictions, open yet closed, public yet secret, cloaked like Christo, silent like Cage, white like Rauschenberg, a chef who serves only an empty plate, shiny white. So clean, so perfect, so pure, and you pay, and you pay, and you pay. For what? For what is not there. For the still center. For the silent surface. For peace, for ease of use. For pinch and slide and multi-touch. This is my genius. This is my soul in art. My poet's heart. Sold so low. I solo like Lowell on a brackish shoal. Strolled in Whole Foods supermarkets, an angel-headed hipster with thin smartphone containing multitudes, songs and contacts and email and web ringing with rhythm of Roth. Dark, dark my light, and darker my desire. Which I is I? iMac, iPod, iTunes, iChat, iPhone? Brilliant as bowls. I am I. But you are not I, which is really too bad for you. Who needs George Winston when you've got Rob Coslow and Bliss out at music.podshow.com? Let's play a round of the world's favorite game, Guru Roulette. I've replaced the numbers on a roulette wheel with the names of investment gurus. I'll spin the wheel and roll the marble in from the selected guru, give you a little background on investment from his philosophy. So here we go. The winner on show 50 of the Mad Money Machine is Daniel R. Solin. Daniel R. Solin is a leading securities arbitration lawyer and principal in Academic Wealth Management, LLP, a registered investment advisor. He's the author of Does Your Broker Owe You Money? And also the author of the newly released The Smartest Investment Book You'll Ever Read, subtitled The Simple Stress-Free Way to Reach Your Financial Goals. Now, this little book, it has 44 chapters in it, but don't worry, it's only 170-some pages. So they're kind of, this would be a great book, for example, to put it in your bathroom. And you can read a chapter per day, I guess is the way that would work. And so if you start now, then on the 22nd day, you'll get to the chapter Risk and Reward. And he says, everyone wants to make as big a return as he or she can, but at what risk? The possibility of gaining a few percentage points on the upside may be dwarfed by the increase in downside risk. And he shows a chart in there that makes this point. He says, if you invested in a diversified portfolio consisting of 100% stocks during the period 1973 to 2004, your average return would have been 11.19%. 100% stocks, 11.19%. Your worst loss in any one calendar year would have been 20%. However, if you had a diversified portfolio invested in only 60% stocks and 40% bonds, your average return would have been 10.49%, only 0.7% less than the 100% stock portfolio. However, your worst loss in any one year, instead of being 20.15% with the 100% stock portfolio, would have been only 9.15%. By moving from a portfolio that is 100% invested in stocks to one that is invested 60% in stocks and 40% in government bonds, it is possible to greatly reduce the downside risk while sacrificing only a modest amount of upside potential. Let's hear from the author himself.
When you play by the rules set by the financial services industry, you are playing by rules that guarantee that brokers will get rich, and in all likelihood, investors will underperform the market. I wrote this book so that investors could achieve superior returns. Market returns are superior returns. Investors who follow the simple principles in my book are assured of achieving market returns.
And boy, oh, are the principles ever simple. He gets you to evaluate what level of risk you should take, and it breaks that down into low, medium, high, or high. And then depending on which one of those levels of risk you should take, he has percentages that you should invest in one of just three index funds. You'd invest a certain percentage in the U.S. Total Stock Market Fund. You would invest probably a smaller percentage in the Total International Stock Fund. And then, depending on your level of risk, a percentage in the Total Bond Market Fund. I encourage you to take a look at this book. I got mine from the library. You can find a link to it at madmoneymachine.com in the guru page. Because Daniel R. Solon is our guru for Mad Money Machine Show number 50. Congratulations, Daniel R. Solon. Hey, a couple little housekeeping things before I let you go. I was interviewed by Derek Simons on his Taking Stock podcast that you can find at istockanalyst.com. That was a lot of fun talking with Derek. There's an interesting article someone posted in the show notes for show 49 out at the forums talking about the Social Security plan that I talked about on the last show, and he talks about the effects of inflation on that. I encourage you to go out to the forums and read that article. Did you see Fast Money on Friday, January 12th? Henry Blodgett, our guru from the last show, was on Fast Money. Can you imagine that? A person who is now an index fund devotee appearing on a stock trading show like that. It was quite interesting. It was like a fox in a hen house, or maybe it was more like a hen in the fox house. A couple of favors I'd like to ask for you to do. Would you please dig me? Go to madmoneymachine.com. At the top right, you'll see the link for Dig Me. Just click it and dig me. I would encourage you to subscribe to the forums at madmoneymachine.com and get involved in the discussions that are going on there. All music on the show is provided by music.podshow.com. Music for the podcasters. And last and most important, check out IFA.com, Index Funds Advisors. Man, they've got some good answers out there. This has been Paul Douglas Boyer saying it takes money to make money, and it takes knowing about your risk level to make a Mad Money Machine. I'll see you next time.